If the committee could come back, that would be great. Thank you all. We have so few times to just talk to each other. It's a little frustrating. Okay. So our purpose today is to go through the articles of the bylaws that are identified on your list. We have done a first pass on all of these except Article 6, the Board CEO interrelationship, where we'd ask the General Manager to give us some language to work with. Mr. Nichols, just to give you a quick update what's going on here, we did an analysis of the various reports about governance. We've had a series of conversations among ourselves. We are in the process of creating our bylaws, which is the way I think of it is bylaws are written in concrete. Procedures are written with erasable ink. So we're working on our bylaws, and then we'll eventually get to what's left in procedures. And so we're trying very hard to stay at the, I'd say, about the 10,000-foot level here and not get too detailed, but give very clear indication of how we plan to do our business. So I want to start with Article 1. Last thing I want to say for everybody who was here last week is the changes we made last week are not yet incorporated. So that will be coming. Okay. Oh, gosh. We don't do that in Arlington. I need to approve the agenda. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Second? Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. We also need to approve the minutes from last week, which are extremely short. Could I have a motion to approve them? Is there a second? All those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Thank you, Laura. Thank you, Nicola. Let's get started. We did have an addition to Article 1 in the mission that I just want to remind everybody else. Mr. McKay suggested, and we agreed, that the first line would say the WMATA Board of Directors, defined as principals and alternates, furthers the mission of the Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority. So that change will be incorporated when this comes back. Is there anything else in Article 1 that people want to make changes to? Mr. Downey.
Not that I want to make a change to it.
Okay.
Just pointing out, this is the revised mission that was enacted by the board last fall to include safety. And I note that we just got a letter from the National Transportation Safety Board commending us for having made that change and taking that corrective action plan off the table. So I wouldn't want to touch that.
No. Okay. Mr. Downs, was that a reach for your mic or no? No. Okay. All right. So we're good with Article 1. Now, basically, once I say that we're good with Article 1, we're then moving this over into the draft, which we are going to eventually take out to the public. Nothing's approved until probably the end, probably into May, but our goal is to get a draft that we can share with the RAC and with the Board of Trade and COG, et cetera, over the month of probably April into May. We finished Article 2 and Article 3. Mr. Sarles, you're smiling. Is that for a reason? Okay. I just keep rolling here. Okay, Article 4 is board communication with CEO and other officers. Other officers being our direct reports, the Inspector General, the General Counsel, and the Office of the Board Secretary. And I did say that, I thought. Yeah, Inspector General. Changes here? I did, in my note to you all, suggest that, in fact, the JCC, which is currently on page 15 of this draft, under Article 13, that the JCC actually more properly belongs, in my opinion, in this section. And we heard, and I believe Mr. Sarles sent us all a memo to that, to the staff's view. I did have some conversation with the Arlington folks who participate in the JCC, And I believe, I'm looking back here, that there was a little bit of conversation among JCC members where they were expressing, I think, some agreement that they would prefer it to be reflected in this section as, rather than the other. Mr. Downey.
I think we need a longer discussion about the JCC and how it functions, and is it a WMATA creation or a board member creation? Is it subject to other issues within here? Are the members of the JCC subject to the same ethics requirements that the rest of us are? I think if the JCC provisions were put in here, that in effect is saying the JCC members are free to communicate with the CEO and other members of the staff, and you know, and that they are in effect surrogates and have the same identity as board members. And I don't think we should leave that impression.
You know, if you read, let me, I agree with you that I don't think they are surrogates. I think they are our staff who function that way. And if you look at the language on page 15, and I think with one small addition, we may be able to get partially where you're going. I don't know that we can resolve the ethics question, but I might suggest that the first sentence read, the Jurisdictional Coordinating Committee was established by the board to facilitate the exchange of information and viewpoints between, I've now lost where I put my note. There is a way, I believe, to say that they're established by the board to facilitate the board's communication around technical areas and other areas of interest related to the work of the board.
In this article as drafted, there is a provision that indicates that any communication by board members to the senior staff, to the appointed staff, will be made available to all board members. If we were to include the JCC in that loop, I think the same kind of provision would and should apply. One reason I raise this is the JCC is a black box as far as I'm concerned. We do not participate in it. We don't care to participate in it in that sense. But if a lot of things are going on in that context, I think they have to be shared with the entire board.
Right. Well, and there is a requirement that the summaries of their meetings be shared with the full board, and I don't think we want to lose that.
Yeah, and we certainly should.
And
should
you do have that, FTA member, FTA participation.
They're there on behalf of FTA,
Not
on behalf of the federal board members.
I see. Mr.
In
Nichols.
Practice, how does the JCC operate?
I don't know. Perhaps, is there a JCC? Adam, are you the chair at the moment?
Yes, I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question.
How do you operate? How does the JCC operate?
In a sense.
But maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I'm fine if someone else would like to answer the question.
It's essentially what you see here before you. We meet each month to offer staff advice and clarifications on things that they're going to be bringing to the board, as in, this is something my board member would like to see, this is something my board member would not like to see, and at the same time, we're there to ask questions on the behalf of the board members, to seek clarifications from WMATA staff, and these clarifications are then shared with our board members directly. It's essentially a staff meeting. The JCC does not make recommendations as a body, and we do not vote. We do not make policy recommendations.
Mr. Pant, do you want to add something to that?
No, I think that's pretty much how it functions. And when it was originally created, it got created to start reviewing the budget. That's way back in 82. One of the things the JCC did was review the proposed budget and provide comments either jointly or individually to the respective board members. But it's essentially a staff-to-staff dialogue.
It's not.
Yeah.
Mr. Nichols?
I'm sorry, I did that again, didn't I? It's not ad hoc, or is it? It's not ad hoc, it's a committee that has a chairman and a convener, and it takes minutes and all of those sorts of things, and it sends out committee minutes
Yes, committee meetings.
Meeting summaries, and those are distributed to the board and to others, and, okay.
Yes, and I think the reference that it was established by the board actually indicates the need that the board saw that there was a staff board relationship as we interface with Metro. So there is a great dependence upon there being a par in terms of all of the conversations that there, when we get here, there is a clarity now as to the information that's been shared. I think Mr. Nichols kind of highlighted the points that are very clear, that it is not ad hoc, it's very formal, it's very...
Madam Chair.
Hold on, Mr. Because Ms. Porter wants to go first.
Let me just clarify, because Mr. Downey mentioned before something about should the JCC be, should communications from the JCC be part of the thing that's shared. In some cases, members of the JCC are staff to board members, and I think we would be uncomfortable having our communications with staff shared with the entire board. Am I stepping in a line here?
I don't know if that's a matter of form over substance, but as written here, if you as board member ask for something, we're all going to be told that.
Right, but no, but if I ask something from WMATA right, staff, yeah. But if I ask something from jurisdictional staff.
Who then ask WMATA staff for it.
I guess I don't have a problem with that, but I just want to clarify that the communications between us and the jurisdictional
between
staff.
Between you and the jurisstictional staff, I think, is a closed loop.
It's the
right.
issue of the
but,
jurisdictional
but it's when
staff
it gets into issues that are being raised. I think just in terms of maybe form over substance.
I'm sorry. I apologize. Yeah. Wouldn't that be included in the JCC minutes if there are requests made?
Which come a couple of months after the meeting.
I think they're, yeah, that's part of the problem is when it gets to be a moving target because we're working fast.
Right.
Sometimes, but I think there's it's incumbent upon the general manager also to share the responses to everything with the full board. I guess the other difficulty I'm having, Mr. Donegan, is we have so many new folks that right now I think some of the questions are more, you know, like
in nature, sure.
How do we figure out this piece because we're new and jurisdictional staff is trying to respond to how a new person asks the question.
Which I would expect would go on and should go on. I mean, you are the conduit to the jurisdictions, the staff is the support in that. But again, I think the form of the bylaws would be better served if the JCC was a separate section. Maybe in this board, Article 4, there would be reference to it, but I don't think it should be characterized as the relationship between the board and the staff.
Okay, so it may be partly a title of the article issue. Are you suggesting there could be an A and a B?
Or
a separate,
JCC,
okay.
And perhaps in here a reference that those communications are part of the JCC operation, but they don't substitute for conversations between the board and the senior staff.
Right. Absolutely. Mr. Nichols.
And this is more just in a way of learning. And the JCC is essentially transit professionals. In most cases, in a sense, it's professionals talking with transit professionals in working sessions, really boiling down and gathering data and understanding data at a granular level that we'll probably never get at this level in terms of comprehension. And, I mean, it sounds like extremely productive and effective kind of working group, gather data, understand it, distill it, and help to inform board members who are not transit professionals, generally speaking, about exactly what the implications of decisions are, which is great. And they're made in a collaborative, I mean, in a collective sense at the committee level, and obviously individual conversations take place between jurisdictions and professionals. I guess, am I concerned that it becomes too much of a prescribed formality that it takes away, that it creates a burden and difficulty within the collaborative side of just professionals working with professionals? And the question is, with no predicted outcome, I'm just asking what the process is.
Ms. O'Keefe?
Yes. I would just like to say a few things about what we're struggling with here. Mm-hmm. If you take a look on page 15, the shaded language is the language in the from the last resolution of the board that addressed the JCC, which occurred in 1983. And that language very clearly sets up what I would call an extended staff collaboration to allow jurisdictional staff to collect the information, do the analysis, and advise their respective board members.
Right.
So that particular committee, if you will, and that's what it was called, well, it was the title was a little bit different originally. It was called Joint Coordinating Committee, and then it's kind of evolved into Jurisdictional Coordinating Committee. So Joint Coordinating Committee, I think if you think about that, truly captures the essence of this body. It's become an issue recently, and I don't think Mr. Nichols was at the last board meeting, or perhaps you were, when one of our frequent members of the public objected to the fact that the meetings were not, had become closed meetings. And so
the JCC meeting.
Yes, this is crystallized a reconsideration of what the essence of this body is. So when I and my staff initially worked on this particular part of the governance, we put it in the committee section, although separate from the other two committees, which are very formalized citizen bodies. And they, of course, have been adopted subsequent, far later than 1983. And they have very formalized structures. They each have bylaws, and again, they're quite distinct citizen bodies that have particular focus. Each one has a separate focus, the Writers Advisory Council and the Access Committee. So in our most recent discussion, when we really started looking at it, clearly the either Joint Coordinating Committee or Jurisdictional Coordinating Committee is a very different body, and it serves a completely different function. It's not a group of citizens. It's a group, as you've said, of staff professionals. So really, we're just looking for the right place to put it and have the board consider again formally what it did not consider originally, because the original resolution didn't address open, closed, any of those things, and those have only become issues more recently because we have, again, two very formalized citizen committees that the board has created. So I think the real issue is the nature of it, whether they're open or closed. We can leave it where it is. We can create a separate, just an entirely separate article. And, yeah, right. And that was really the point of this consideration, whether it should be treated separately. And putting it under the CEO staff board section does perhaps cloud things a little bit. Might be better just to put it in an entirely separate from the separate from the citizen committees and separate from this Article 4, because that seems to raise issues that really probably don't need to be raised. This body has functioned, I think, very well for years and years. The only real issue is, should it be open or closed? And because, in terms of open to the public or closed. And because our own staff meetings are not open to the public, and I assume the jurisdictional staff meetings are not open to the public, it doesn't seem logical that the coordinating combined group should be open to the public, because they're dealing with issues in the very early stages where our staff is trying to get them ready to go to the board and to educate the jurisdictional staff about issues that might come up that their respective board members might want to specifically focus on. So it's a long-winded answer to, I think we should just make a separate article and avoid the complication of having it either under four or the other committee sections.
Okay. I saw a lot of head nods to that, so
we'll go ahead and pull this out of 15 and create a relatively short article that describes the relationship as a support to individual board members.
You mean 13?
And
and it's a different relationship from the citizens' advisory committee, formerly
yeah.
created body that supports to us.
Yeah, so we'll pull it out.
So basically you'd have Article 13, board established advisory committees. Article 14, jurisdictional coordinating right. committee, something like that.
Right.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, if people think that's the best, if you want to put it at the end as opposed to in the center,
I wasn't numbering. I was just understanding
yeah,
the level.
Right, and these shaded sections, which Ms. O'Keefe said just come out of that 83 resolution, way too much detail for the bylaws.
I really just put them in there for your information.
Exactly.
So you can see the history of this
okay.
body.
All right. So are there any other changes then to Article 6 as it currently exists?
Article
which
six?
Is board, I'm sorry, four, pardon me. Those are Roman numerals. Any other, the shaded, again, the shaded stuff would come out and go to procedures, and the line throughs are as usual.
Just a question.
Yes.
Are the policies that are in this article currently in effect? In terms of sharing information requests and responses, they are. Okay.
And I guess it's incumbent upon us to follow them as board members. Okay, anything else on four? Okay, we're going to move that over and consider it to be done. Moving on to Article 6, which is the board CEO interrelationship. We just had a line here. We asked Mr. Sarles to draft up something, and so we have it before us. Ms. Porter.
First of all, I want to say that I appreciate the clarification of the CEO's responsibility. And when I looked at it, though, it seems rather odd to have such a detailed explanation of the CEO's responsibility and not an equally detailed description of how that differs from the board's. So what I would like to propose, and I apologize to my colleagues for not getting this out earlier, but a sentence that goes, it goes in front of the CEO's responsible, a sentence that says, the board is responsible for policy, financial direction, and WMATA's relationship with riders and jurisdictional stakeholders.
Read it again, please.
The board is responsible for policy, financial direction, and WMATA's relationship with riders and jurisdictional stakeholders.
Okay. Reactions? Mr. Costa.
Yes, so could you just explain the last phrase that you put out there, the relationship with stakeholders and jurisdictions.
Yeah. The direction to have, for example, public hearings is given to the board, not to the CEO. And the advisory committees are advisory to the board. Actually, one of them used to be advisory to the CEO, but the board made the decision that the advisory committees would be advisory to the board and not to the CEO. And just as the description of what the CEO is responsible for doesn't mean that the board has no responsibility in that area, obviously. The description of what the board is primarily responsible for doesn't exclude the CEO working in those areas also. What I was trying to do here is just make a clarification of where the primary responsibility lies. And I think the sentence that Mr. Sarles has suggested, I think very clearly talks about administration and operations subject to policy direction and so forth. I think that's very clear. And I think there should be an equally clear description that the board's responsibilities are policy, financial direction, not financial details, financial direction, but also because it is up to the board to hold public hearings, to hear the input of the advisory committees, that that strongly suggests to me that the board is given primary responsibility for interaction with the ridership and the public. And of course, because we all represent jurisdictions, we also have the responsibility, the primary responsibility for interaction with the jurisdictional stakeholders. And again, that does not exclude the general manager or the CEO and the staff from participating in those. I think it's a clarification of where the respective primary responsibilities lie.
Can I just make one slight comment? I don't disagree with anything you said. You just might want to consider whether that's, I think, basically a restatement with, of what's in Article 2, board responsibilities. If you want to restate it in this other article, that's great. I mean, it just reemphasizes it, but it's just something to consider. So it's parallel.
So we, right. The and same it, statement appears in both places, Mr. Charles, is what you're...
Yeah, just make sure that...
Yeah. Because we did have, I can't remember now if it was Tom or Mort who added something in Article 2 that got to the oversight. Yeah.
Right. But the what I'm trying to do here is this article specifically talks about the board CEO interrelationship.
Yep.
And so I think it's important to have both sides of the equation sitting in this article. And I don't mean to exclude anything that's in Article 2, but I think you need to have a sentence. And I try to include the things that are listed in Article 2. There's the it talks about policy. It talks about fiduciary responsibility, which I said financial direction, which I think is primarily it. And then the other things, I mean, there's planning, operations, reporting, and customer service. But I think the essence of that is the responsibility to respond to the ridership, the public, and our jurisdictional stakeholders.
I think the sentiment.
Yeah, I think sentiment is
right.
Yeah.
And I think Rich's point is right. Yeah. Let's just look at your sentence and look at that opening sentence in two and make sure that they're basically a repeat, I think would be my suggestion.
But this has to be more explicit,
yeah.
I think.
Okay.
And I would, oh, go ahead.
Mr. Nichols.
No, I think I get the essence of the question or the suggestion, and I will, before the next meeting, I will have read everything, so
sure.
I understand fully the interrelationship of all of the articles. And the only thing that strikes me is that, and maybe it's because I haven't read all of everything yet, clearly it's the obligation of the CEO to be accountable to the stakeholders as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that through the management of the system, that's the overall goal. And I guess it to make the point too finally, may make it too extreme, or is it embodied in the rest of the articles so that it's clear how the process works?
Or
is it stating the obvious? Maybe
actually, that's a good question, and let me clarify a little bit. I'm not talking about responsibility to the stakeholders. Obviously, the general manager, the CEO, our CEO now has, he's always been the general manager until we changed it.
You got two titles? Is that in the contract, both ways?
He is... He is obviously responsible to all the riders, to the jurisdictions,
right.
And to the stakeholders.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's why in this particular article, though, I think it's a question, and obviously we're responsible for the operations of the authority, too. I mean, the board, I mean, we can't say, oh, you know, all that stuff, that's the general manager, don't look at me. What I'm trying to do is clarify who is going to be the primary entity. In the general manager is the guy on the ground who is saying, you know, there's an issue of operations, escalator X isn't working, that's who we're going to look at. But if we're saying who is responsible for going to the public and making clear that we are considering X, Y, and Z change, that is very clearly on the board. We are the entity that is obligated to go forward and hold public hearings. And so there's a clear responsibility that interacting with the public is primarily on us.
And
not saying that
public,
it's not on the CEO.
The public as public, more so than riders as riders. I think we need to hold some of this discussion until we talk about Article 5 and communication with the riders and who they
deal with. But the riders advisory.
We don't want to say the CEO isn't.
Right,
and I
don't
riders.
Mean this to be
yeah.
exclusionary.
Yeah.
I mean it to be parallel.
Yeah.
I mean to say of the things, who is the entity that is primarily the Riders Advisory Council reports to us.
Yeah.
And not to say that I don't think this article in the language that the CEO sent to us, he meant to say that the board is not responsible for the overall administration and operations. I don't think that was intended at all. And my suggested language is not intended at all to say that the CEO is not responsible for interacting with riders. It's a question of if we divide up which entity has the primary given responsibility, then it should be clear who is doing which.
But if it's, you know, resting this on the Riders Advisory Council being advisory to the board, they're not the sole.
I think we need to sort out here operations versus policy.
Policy,
too.
Yeah.
And I think you've used the word, I don't know, maybe six times, Kathy, about primarily responsible. Mm-hmm. And that's a notion that needs to be in each of these sentences, too,
okay.
So that it's clear they're shared, but there are places where we take the lead, and there are obviously places which are the managers.
Yeah, I think really it goes back to the basics here. You have the lead with regard to policy.
Right.
And you should therefore have the responsibility for the public input. I have the lead for the operations, and naturally there's a lot of public input there.
Yes.
And I think that's really where you divide the two. It goes back to the basic division of responsibilities.
Mr. Downs?
I have a mechanical question. Is it?
Turn your mic on.
Intended that Article 6 replaces or incorporates Section E of Article 2 under Board Responsibilities, because Section E says relationship with CEO and references the compact. Are we talking about in Article 6, in effect, that section? I'm not sure why we have a freestanding.
Which section are you referring to?
He's on page three.
Page three.
That's a really good question, Mr. Downs, and maybe we can go back and look at that, and maybe it definitely could be subsumed.
Well,
into six.
But my understanding is that number 22 in there. I'm not sure what point that serves, but I understood the purpose of that to be appoint, remove, determine compensation, specify the duties of the CEO, et cetera, that that's sort of the gist of this piece. And I would agree with you that number 22 could probably be deleted as being redundant. Yes?
Yeah, I think 22 is definitely redundant. And actually, it's more in Article 4 that 22 is already taken care of. In the board, I do think it's helpful in the board responsibilities as opposed to the relationship to say that we have an ongoing responsibility around these issues of compensation and evaluation, which is what I think the point of 23 is for all of the people who are our direct reports. And so probably relationship with the CEO is the wrong title there. And it probably ought to say something like evaluation of, and list the titles of all of the people there in 22. So that, I think that cleans that one up. Thanks, Mr. Down, for pointing that out. Folks, I don't want to belabor this. I think we've got agreement to add a sentence like this. I do want to ask one question just so we're all on the same page. We use jurisdictional and signatory, and they actually have two different meanings. Mm-hmm. And, most of us sitting here represent jurisdictions, although some people represent signatories. I think in this context, we mean both, because I would say that the board has some responsibility to be talking to the talk, in the same way that some people talk directly to the governor, even though that's not a jurisdiction. So it shows up in the next section.
Yeah, this brings back a question that I raised last time when we were talking about duties of the chair and the question of who is the person who can represent the interest of the authority with respect to the signatories and the jurisdictions. And I think we cannot leave that on each jurisdiction is spoken to only by their members, if in fact it's an issue that the full authority should be raising with all the jurisdictions. So I don't want to put this sentence in without saying it's not the exclusive point of contact with the jurisdictional stakeholders.
It being?
Your proposed sentence. I think the
right.
Last phrase of which was communication with the jurisdictional stakeholders.
Well, actually, I said relationship.
Relationship.
I didn't mean it. Right. I meant it to be more broad and more general than
but not
communication.
But not the exclusive relationship.
No. I believe it was Ms. Hines who said putting the word or maybe it was Mr. Stiles who said putting the word primarily in there.
Yeah.
I think would clarify and is what I meant to say.
In both sentences, right?
In both sentences.
Right. Yeah.
In other words, the board is primarily, the CEO is primarily.
And I guess we should say jurisdictional and signatory, jurisdictional partners and signatories here to capture both
okay.
of those ideas, I think. Okay? I want to just, does it bother anybody else in the first part of this article that we have sentences in the conditional, the board has confidence that the CEO will build a high-performing organization. Does the will bother anybody else?
You mean as opposed to
as
is
opposed
building?
As opposed to shall or is building.
Oh.
If it doesn't bother anybody
it
else.
It actually did bother me.
Okay.
So now what? No, it's, well, it's really... The CEO shall manage a high-performing organization. I mean, it's going to get better every year. We're going to continue to build it every year, and it's a constant process. But the responsibility is to manage it. And I wonder if build suggests that it's not right now. And you know, there's an organization that has. Obviously, every organization has challenges, but it's got a competent team. It's got people who run the business. They run it on a day-to-day basis. You know, we're just as accountable for building it as the CEO is in terms of identifying issues, resources, opportunities. And I just wonder if that is more of a negative phrasing than something that stands the test of time. Just a thought.
I actually like your use of I like manage. But I also like build because I think we are in both businesses and we will be in both businesses of building and rebuilding mm-hmm. forever. So
build and manage a high-performing
yeah.
high performing
organization. And I actually would prefer shall to will myself, but I don't. And I think shall focus in the next sentence too.
Okay.
Everybody all right with that?
I'm okay.
Small nitpicking thing.
I'm sorry, Ms. Stein, you're saying it should be the CEO shall build and manage AI?
Yes.
All right. Thanks.
Yes. Okay, moving on to Article 7. Ms. O'Keefe, for the purposes of all the new folks, perhaps I'm going to ask my question again around the issue of quorum, because I was confused by who actually makes up the signatory jurisdictions. What's the role of the feds relative to this?
Well, the last compact amendment did not affect the quorum or voting rules in the compact. So this language is the same as is in the compact. Of course, the federal board members can comprise the quorum. Quorum still needs to have one member from each signatory.
And by signatory, we mean
Maryland
Virginia,
and the
district.
So, so if the four members did not include anyone from the federal, that would still be a quorum.
Could be part of the four, but
it could be part of the four.
There has to be three others
right.
who are there.
But it's necessary that there be one Virginia, one Maryland, and one district voting
yes.
member, right?
Right. And by vote, I'm sorry to keep doing
yeah.
And by voting member, you mean principal, or if a principal isn't there, the alternate.
Yes.
Someone who is going to vote in that meeting.
Yes, that's correct.
So I think, again, for clarity's purpose, I would just suggest that we go ahead and replace signatory with Maryland, Virginia, and the district, so that include that, so it would be very clear there has to be one of those, one of each of those, and there's not a question about is, are the feds signatory given all the things that have happened in the past.
And yes, Mr. Newhouse.
Just a this speaks specifically to formal meetings of the board.
Right.
Does not relate to meetings of committees.
That's
of the
right.
board at
That's
all.
That's correct.
Okay.
That's correct. Okay.
Thank you.
Other parts of
I had a
articles.
Question. Do you think it's worthwhile to actually establish a definition within the bylaws of a jurisdiction and signatory so you don't have to define it at each point? I mean, it's just a question, but
those terms are defined in the compact, and I'd be happy to.
Or you could
those.
Or you could relate it back
yes,
to the bylaws.
I can pull those in into the bylaws.
Great idea.
And following up on the question Mr. Nichols just asked, should this article be entitled Board Meetings? Just to clarify that.
Yes, because we actually
we use we use board communication. We do use the word board in other places.
Yes, yeah, I think that's right. Okay. All right.
Question.
Mr. Downing.
In the quorum and discussion of this sort of flexible process for the district's alternates to serve. Is that, that's a compact provision, as
yes,
I recall.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Right, so we could not adopt that for other.
Yes.
Right.
Okay.
Okay, special meetings. Do people have anything on the other parts of this one? On this particular thing? Everybody is all right with most the rest of seven? Okay, let's move seven over.
I'm reserving
the opportunity to check later.
Alvin, after you read after you read it, if you have a lot of questions, just send them in, and then we'll deal with them all. Okay?
Sounds good to me. Thanks.
What is the congressional statement? Reserving the opportunity to object.
To object later, yeah.
Later.
Okay, moving on.
Well, come in.
Yeah. Moving on to Article 8, Agenda Minutes and Parliamentary Authority.
I didn't realize you were moving off
oh,
of
I'm sorry,
all of
more,
seven. Yeah, I had a couple
okay,
more questions.
Okay, seven.
Under E, Actions, I guess that's describing what the board does at its meetings, but it also includes the sentence that no individual member shall direct or supervise the CEO, which I think is a correct policy. I'm not sure it belongs right there. But
perhaps, does it belong back in our board CEO?
It might belong back with the relationship as opposed to
okay.
in the meetings.
Good. Let's move that to Article 6. Okay. Anything else on Article 7 that anybody wants to bring up?
I think it comes up later. But we have the public notice and posting and timing issue.
That's in the next section.
Yeah, it's referred to in D, but then I guess comes up further in the next section. Okay. It's
agenda minutes.
8A.
Yeah.
Refers to that. Okay.
Okay. All right. So are we ready to move on from 7? Okay, let's move that over and consider it done. Let's look at 8. Oh, we got 5 minutes left. So everything that's shaded is to be not be here, to end up in procedure. So you're really only looking at the unshaded sections as what we would put in the bylaws.
So we're able to have a subsequent discussion about the timing of making it public, the timing of making it available to the board, and the gap that might exist
well,
in that.
And again, I mean, I think we should have an expectation that they are available to the public in the bylaws.
Yes, but not necessarily.
But
the timing
and everything
the
belongs,
yeah.
I believe, right. in the procedures.
Fine.
Okay?
Yeah.
People are okay with that. Mr. Downs?
Just a question about terminology.
Mm-hmm.
Board meetings inclusive or exclusive of committee meetings?
This section, That's a really good question. And I must say, committee meetings, there's, we could decide if we were going to handle them differently to have a have some of this reference in the committee meeting section, or we could say that this applies to all meetings of the board.
Well, there's a question about whether the four-day release applies to committees as well as board meetings. Mm-hmm. There's a question about is there a comment period at committee meetings as there is at board meetings?
Right. Again, I would say that those are more procedures than in the bylaws.
But it's a definition.
Right. I think.
Is it? Can I?
Yes. Yep.
We don't always publish in advance the materials for the committee meetings. Correct? Is that right?
We do publish them in advance.
We may not publish every item.
I think this particular section is supposed to apply to both committee and board
meetings. But I don't think that the information for today's session was published in advance.
One piece of it was not. That's an exception.
If we put it in the bylaws, I don't think we're allowed to make exceptions.
Yeah.
Okay. It sounds to me like this is about meetings, and both full board meetings and committee meetings, that this section is intended to cover meetings, all of our meetings. People agree with that?
Yeah.
No?
Well,
Mr.
If we plan at some point in the future not to publish everything for a committee meeting in advance, then we shouldn't have a statement that says all of this will be published in advance.
The question I think we're going to is from a fundamental piece in the bylaws, what do we have in terms of notice, information, et cetera, for meetings? How and what, in a detail, to me belongs to the procedure since we decided to separate. I'm trying to see, are we eliminating something that when you get to procedures, we could not address there? And I don't,
I think what I'm looking at is the remaining sentence under A, agenda development and distribution, which, if I'm understanding it, reads, the final board agenda and the supporting documents for the public board meeting shall be published in advance. And so I think the question is, does public board meetings mean the committee meetings? And I believe that was the question that Mr. Downs referred to. Or we could say it means only the board, the meetings of the full board, the voting meetings of the full board.
As the other two sections, B and C, specifically refer to board and committee.
Correct.
And A seems to refer only to board. So if we didn't say committee, we're making a judgment that committee materials will not be provided, which I don't think has been the practice.
No. That has been the practice for the most part. Ms. O'Keefe, do you have any wisdom to offer here?
Well, for the most part, the committee materials as well as the board materials go out on Friday. I agree there are occasionally exceptions, but they really are quite rare. So it's really at the board's discretion whether you want to have the same rules apply to the board and the committee.
You know, one way to go at this is to leave the sentence as it is and then create a set of conditions under which an exception would be made. So that you'd have a subsequent sentence that says exceptions, you know, may be made for specially scheduled meetings, sensitive materials that should not be in the public domain, or, you know, items which come up at the last minute that the manager has to bring to the board. So that you could put your public intention out there that, in general, things are available in advance, and then list these.
And that would be applicable both to board meetings and committee meetings?
Yeah.
I'm okay with that. Yeah.
Does that seem like a solution?
Yeah.
I think that's good.
Okay.
All right, so staff will craft a, and the audio, do we do audio recordings of the committee meetings too? I mean, that it's all streamed live, right? So
when we, for example, next week, we'll have a committee meeting.
By phone.
Conference call to discuss the topic we discussed today. I won't even mention the name. How was that handled from a public standpoint? Who's
the board secretary?
Who hears that, and how does
board
it work?
Do we stream conference calls? Do we make audio recordings of conference calls?
Yes.
Okay.
And those would be available as audio recordings rather than video recordings on the website.
We don't do video.
There's no video. We don't do
they would be audio.
We don't do video.
We do not do video.
So it's a recording post fact. It's not a okay. It's not a live stream, or is it?
Oh, I know.
They're streamed live
okay.
as well as recorded.
Okay. All right.
So, and the conference call would be streamed live?
Yes.
Okay. So the only exception to that would be like personnel matters or things which are properly done in executive session wouldn't be streamed live because they're
they
covered.
Wouldn't be streamed at all.
They wouldn't be streamed at all. They're covered by executive session. Okay. Are we clear here on this section? Are we ready to move on from 8? Can we take 5 more minutes?
I think we started late, didn't we?
Yeah.
Okay. So you're still within your
commitment. I know. executive sessions, closed sessions of the board. This is where we have this issue about the applicability to committee meetings. Oh, and we don't have Mr. Giancola or we have you, Mr. Yule. Sometimes your committee meetings are closed. Your subcommittee meetings are closed. Just to catch Mr. Nichols up. There's another section where it says only committees of the board. I mean, sorry, only the board may go into executive session. But we have a practice that we have two subcommittees, one around audits and the other audits and investigations, and another around technology where there's often procurement issues, where they have indeed been going into closed session. So we were trying to figure out if we could do this in a way that basically has the board manage it in closed session rather than in the subcommittee format. I don't know if staff has any, if anybody's had any further thought about that. Other than I think there was a feeling we should move that way. Mr. Downey?
I have no experience with the way it used to be, like all the rest of you at the table except for Kathy, but I gather this change of not allowing executive sessions for committees was a fairly recent change and was responsive to a lot of concerns that existed about committees coming in, going out, doing everything executive and then not acting publicly. So, not knowing what the problem was, I don't know what the correction has been, but I certainly think, among others, the audit committee does need the ability to meet.
And I think we eliminated the other subcommittee, so you're right.
Yeah, and the other subcommittee
is going on.
We did eliminate that.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And then those two items are listed in 5 under A. This section actually lacks a Roman numeral.
No, I think, isn't it?
It's down below.
Yeah, there was a page chopping issue.
All right. Procedures for executive session, all of that, I think, was relatively recently done. Are folks fine with that? And then we have Article 10, which is emergency sessions of the board, which goes through the procedures around notice and
on point 3 under emergency sessions.
Yes.
Procedures are those provided in the compact. But again, to make this a useful document, it might be better to state what they are so you don't have to run to the compact and see what Article 8 is.
Okay. Yeah. We can do that. Anybody else? All right. We've already talked briefly about public hearings.
this is pretty much compact language as I understand it. These are the things which for which we are required to hold a public hearing, and then we've added it as deemed appropriate by the board. The shaded would move to procedures. Everybody all right with that? And we did discuss moving on to 13. The JCC is gone, and we would have accessibility and the riders underneath. Mr. Downey, were you saying something?
No. There's been a question back and forth about for some time about public speakers.
You need to.
There's been a question back and forth about a clear policy about public speakers at committee meetings.
Right.
We have them at board meetings. It was a question as well about whether or not a board meeting is a committee meeting.
Right.
It's still not clear, I don't believe.
I agree with you about that.
And it probably needs clarification.
And I would suggest the place to do that is in our committee section, which I just skipped over. Mm-hmm. Because we did some work on it last time. We're going to come back to it on the 14th. So let's tee that up as an issue to talk about when we do that, about whether we'll take public comment at committee meetings. Okay? Are we people okay with the descriptions on in 13 of the Accessibility and Riders Advisory Councils? I think these came right out of their bylaws, so it's pretty general and at the level. Okay. So this, if you go to the last page, this leaves us with three sections that we really are going to need to spend time on April 14th. One is to return to the committee's conversation. And I would encourage you, we had that initial conversation. People were going to look at the chart and see if there were things that they thought we should adjust. Communication with the public is the section we have not touched at all. So, again, if you have ideas that you think we need to be sure to flesh out, again, having that list in advance just makes it possible for us to do our work. And public comment fits in there as well, although we did public hearings but not public comment. And public comment really is an issue inside committees at this point, I think.
So that when we get to that, we'll resolve the question.
We'll resolve that.
Is raised. Yeah.
That's right. So those are the sections we have left outstanding that we haven't kind of moved over into cleaned up and ready to go. We'll come back on the 14th and hopefully then be at something on the 28th where we can agree on how we're going to engage folks on it. And I gave you some of my thoughts already, but open to other ideas that people may have. Thanks. We almost did it.
We started late, so you're within an hour.
Okay, so now we have executive session, right, Ms. Hudgens?